Good morning, everyone. I'm going to bring the committee to order, the Civil Law and Data Practices Committee. The first order of business would be the approval of the minutes of March 19th. Representative Pinto, have you had a chance to look at those minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair.
And would you like to move for passage of those?
I do so move, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any discussion on the minutes of March 19th? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. The first bill this morning is Representative Green. Is he in the room? There he is. Please come forward and present your bill. I will move House File 1935 and recommend that it be re-referred to Public Safety and Crime Prevention Committee. Good morning, Representative Green. Go ahead and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the first thing on the agenda would be delete all.
All right. I will move the DE1 amendment.
Okay. This is a call. It's been labeled the autopsy bill, and without going into a lot of details, unless there's questions, this came about across my desk not long ago, and right now, what we've got is an agreement between the tribes and the medical examiners in Minnesota, and they have come to the compromise of the bill that you have before you.
All right.
And it's pretty self-explanatory. I won't read it verbatim, but it spells out what apparently most of the medical examiners have been doing anyway, and it's to to come to an agreement with people of faith that find it offensive to just do an autopsy for any reason. The bill does not prevent an autopsy in the if there's suspicion of foul play. But with that, unless my co-author has something to say, I guess we can bring forth testifiers.
All right, Representative Green, let's get that DE1 taken care of. Is there any discussion on the DE1? Seeing none, all those in favor of passage of the DE1 in order to get the bill in the shape that the author would like, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The DE1 has become the bill. Representative Green, if you have testifiers, looks like the first person is Rebecca St. George.
Thank you. Sit down, Rebecca.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and continue on with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Rebecca St. George. I'm an attorney up at the Fond du Lac Indian Reservation. And about a month ago, I was called on a Sunday afternoon because an elder and a drum keeper from the Mille Lacs Reservation had died in a car accident. Actually, he had died and then died after. He was in a car accident and died after it. The medical examiner had decided that they were going to do an autopsy. The hospital wasn't looking for one, the state patrol wasn't looking for one, and the family, who is Mide, which is a traditional Anishinaabe religious belief system, strongly objected. They were actually horrified. And the medical examiner wouldn't talk to them, wouldn't have a discussion with them, and insisted that he was going to do this autopsy because he could. He would never say why. He was talked out of it. I talked to him at one point, and he said, fine, I'll wait. I'll wait until tomorrow, but I'm still going to do it. Somebody from the family got a hold of a judge, and the judge agreed to sign an order saying, no, just stop. Let the body go. There's no reason for this. The guy had an underlying heart condition. There was no, he was alone in the car. And he refused. The judge signed an order saying release the body immediately. Got the order at 11 o'clock at night. And the medical examiner just plain refused. Said that doesn't apply to me. I don't need to do this. It wasn't until the next morning when we met with a couple of county attorneys that they talked the medical examiner into letting the body go. Now, to be clear, the county attorneys didn't think legally he had to. They weren't sure that the judge's order stood, because the way the law reads, it's totally up to the medical examiner to decide. The medical examiner, who's getting paid per body, that they get to do this, no matter what. So it happened. They released the body eventually when the old guys talked him into it. 2 days later, the same thing happened with the same medical examiner, with a young woman from Fond du Lac, and we went through the same process. This time the medical examiner was angry, he yelled at us, he said he wasn't going to let the body go. Again, we got a judge's order. Again, he said he didn't have to follow it. And again, we got the county attorneys to talk him into letting it go. So what we're asking you to do today is to fix the law so that we don't have to go through that process again, so that it's clear that you don't just have to be a decent guy, which apparently most of the medical examiners are pretty decent. You know, the Hennepin County Medical Examiner apparently does really good work, and we just want people to do that kind of decent work. But some people just won't. And so some people might be compelled, need to be compelled, to consult with the family, to listen to religious objections, so that people don't have to go through what the Ovid family went through and what the Martineau family went through up in northeastern Minnesota. All we're asking is for the legislation to basically promise the family an opportunity to be heard. It's not going to stop any criminal investigations. It's not going to keep autopsies that really need to be done in for public health or for, again, criminal investigations from happening. The standard is pretty low in the bill. So whether the family is Jewish or Hmong, Midewin, Somali, there's a lot of different belief systems that don't believe in autopsies. They'd have the right here, which is guaranteed under the First Amendment of our state constitution, for their exercise of religion. So, thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? Yeah, Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Ms. St. George. Who is this medical examiner?
Thomas Uncini.
George.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
You're supposed to say the chair and then the member, you go through the chair kind of thing. It rules around here. Okay, don't worry about it. So say the name again.
Miss St. George.
Thomas Uncini, U-N-C-I-N-I.
Okay, Madam Chair. And Miss St. George, for which jurisdiction?
Miss St. George.
So this was Carlton County. He also has contracts with... Well, he had a contract with St. Louis County. They have declined to renew his contract. And two or three other counties up in northeastern Minnesota he has contracts with, current contracts.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. St. George. If this guy refuses to accede to a judge's order, or if a person like him refuses to accede to a judicial order, why would a change in law convince someone like this, because it would take a judicial order to enforce this change in law anyway? Why would this solve the problem?
Ms. St. George.
Yeah, that's actually a really great question. The problem is right now he's operating under a law that says that he has the authority, the end. There's no check in it. There's no mention of religious freedom. There's nothing in the law right now that says that anyone can tell him to do anything differently. And so if it's within the statute that says, actually, you need to check in on people in the first place, I think that would make a difference. And I think, you know, this particular individual might be a little bit nervous about not following something like that at this point. But I think it's more the way it's written right now, it's kind of in conflict with our constitutional rights, but it doesn't say that. Does that make sense?
Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair and Ms. St. George, it does. I still have questions because I suspect someone like that is going to find a way to try to maintain their power base. But I have a different question for you. I know in the Christian tradition, at least in the start of modern medical science, 150 years ago, thereabouts, or even more, there was a lot of objection from the Christian side of things, too, to autopsies. If there was a Christian sect, like I think Christians, I'm not sure if Christian Scientists do, but there are still some Christian sects who object to this. Does it have to be specific, or is it just general religious objection? Anyone could do this in the bill.
Ms. St. George.
It's general. And actually, I'd like to go back to your other question really quick. That part of the problem was that the county attorneys and the sheriffs weren't clear that the judge's order was enforceable because of the way the current statute reads. They talked him into going, not because they talked him into releasing the bodies, not because legally they thought he had to. They talked him into it to be a decent person, and they pulled on some social favors to make that happen. We shouldn't have to rely on social capital to have our religious freedoms respected. And yeah, that includes all religious freedoms. There are Orthodox Jews don't believe in this. So this, the way this is written, it's not specific to the Madea folks. It's broadly, if you have a religious objection to autopsies, they need to hear that. They need to at least balance it. They need to at least take it into consideration. It's not necessarily dispositive. It's not the end of the discussion, but they have to at least hear it.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for this testifier? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. And next on the list, Dr. Andrew Baker, Hennepin County Medical Examiner. Thank you for being here, Dr. Baker, and please introduce yourself to the tape and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm going to keep my prepared remarks quite short. My name is Dr. Andrew Baker. I'm the Chief Medical Examiner for Hennepin, Dakota, and Scott Counties. In that capacity, I'm responsible for the safety and welfare of some 1.7 million of my fellow Minnesotans. Please know, however, that I'm not here testifying as a representative of Hennepin County. Rather, I represent the medical examiner community of Minnesota. I have been a practicing forensic pathologist at the federal and regional levels for 17 years. I am not here to testify against this bill. As of last Friday, compromise language was reached. To the best of my knowledge, that language is the draft legislation that you're considering this morning. So long as further amendments are not added, the medical examiner community supports it. I want to say I'm very deeply sorry for the families and the community at large at the center of the controversy that sparked this legislative change. Poor communication was amplified by unacceptable language and culminated in a court order being ignored. Though this will be little consolation to those families, my elected leaders should know that my colleagues in Hennepin, Anoka, Ramsey, Rochester, and Grand Forks run offices where none of those things would ever have happened. The medical examiner community believes that swift administrative action, coupled with appropriate behaviors and training centered on sensitivity, respect, and basic decency, would have prevented any further events like the ones that prompted this bill, and no legislative change would be needed. While it would not be our first choice that changes be made to Statute 390, we recognize the compromises made by all sides, and we support the bill that you see before you. We'd like to acknowledge Representative Green and Senator Lori for their passion regarding this statutory change. I do not question that this legislation was offered with the best of intentions. The medical examiner community feels that this entire process has been very rushed, and we are concerned with hasty changes to an excellent law only 9 years old, affecting 50 or more years of medical practice in Minnesota. We would prefer time, measured in months, not days, to form a working group of experts to craft an ideal solution, preferably administrative, to ensure that death investigations and autopsies in Minnesota are uniformly conducted with professionalism and the highest level of respect and sensitivity for families. But should this bill move forward today from this committee, the medical examiner community will support it and continue to work with the bill's supporters. The supporters of this bill were willing to meet with the medical examiner community as we learned to understand each other's points of view, needs, limitations, and obligations. In the short amount of time we had, the supporters of the bill accepted suggestions from the medical examiner community and incorporated them into the bill. We are grateful to the bill's proponents for their willingness to engage us. As of today, the compromises we agreed to last Friday are why you have a statutory change that the medical examiner community can accept. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Questions, Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. To Dr. Baker, I spoke over the last few days with the medical examiner that I used to work with in Anoka County, Dr. Strobel. And Dr. Strobel had some concerns that I've talked to several of the proponents of the bill, and I feel comfortable with it. But I'd like you to address concerns around where within the proposed language there would be latitude to a medical examiner to do a post or an autopsy on a two of the incidents that she had concerns about involved a potential or a suspected or potential drug overdose, or the fatal motor vehicle accident, where it's unsure as far as the toxicology and if a post is warranted, where within the proposed language you believe that there would be the appropriate latitude to perform those autopsies in those cases.
Dr. Baker.
Madam Chair, Representative Zerwas, thank you for that question. I want to acknowledge that we do have forensic autopsy performance standards that are promulgated by the National Association of Medical Examiners. That is the organization that accredits my office, Dr. Strobel's office, as well as the Ramsey County office. I bring that up because those performance standards were a considerable part of our negotiations with the bill's supporters. And I'd like to acknowledge the fact that the bill's supporters were willing to incorporate many of our autopsy standards into the bill. And they're defined under the term compelling state interest, which I will freely admit is a new term to me. In the medical examiner community, we use the term compelling public interest. To me, those seem largely congruent, but I'm not a legal scholar, so I don't know exactly what the difference would be. My concern when you compare what we consider compelling public interest to what the bill considers compelling state interest is the bill did leave out drug intoxications and overdoses and poisonings and motor vehicle crashes. The current standard of practice in the United States is that all potential drug overdoses or poisonings require a complete autopsy because you cannot interpret the results with only a number from the toxicology lab. Those deaths are somewhat epidemic, so it concerns me that those were not considered a compelling state interest under the statute, and I would have to have a judge validate my medical decision-making if somebody were opposed to one of those cases. For similar reasons, I'm concerned about motor vehicle crashes because you can't know in the very narrow window of time when you have the opportunity to decide if an autopsy is needed or not whether that case is going to turn out to be a crime. There are multi-vehicle crashes. There are people who are drunk and kill other people or run over pedestrians. Even in what appears to be a single motor vehicle crash, sometimes you find out later that it was actually a road rage incident and the person was run off the road. There's just things you don't know at the start of the case. Now, that being said, I want to address the very compelling testimony that came right before me because that was incredibly moving on several levels, not the least of which is those circumstances never needed to happen. Had those cases occurred in Hennepin County, I guarantee you we would have found a way to meet the family's needs, to respect their concerns, to find middle ground, and still fulfill our statutory duty. The idea that you could just take a body and say, autopsy, no questions asked, don't want to hear about it, your beliefs don't matter, does not happen in any other office in this state. There is always a way to find a middle ground. It might be x-rays, it might be other studies, it might be a thorough external examination followed by in-depth consultation with the investigating officers to make absolutely sure you haven't missed anything, and you can still honor the family's wishes. I do believe those cases are compelling state interests, compelling public interests, whatever term of art you want to use, but I also believe there is always a way to work with families. There just is.
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, members, and I think a follow-up question for Dr. Baker on in Section 4, the new proposed Subdivision 2B, line 3.29, we have proposed language, the autopsy is necessary to obtain proper toxicological or other specimens that may represent evidence of a crime or may deteriorate over time. In a potential motor vehicle accident or a drug overdose where intoxication is suspected or a drug overdose is a fatality where a drug overdose is expected, that language would give you the latitude necessary to follow up and do a post, right? I mean, at least as I interpret it.
Dr. Baker, is that the way you see it?
Madam Chair, Representative Zerwas, the part that concerns me is that it says may represent evidence of a crime. So I have to have some way of knowing in advance which of these cases are crimes, and I simply can't know that. And I'll give you a real-world example that happens all the time. We had well in excess of 100 drug-related fatalities just in my three-county area in 2013. I can't possibly know with each of those cases when I'm going to get a call from the county attorney 6 or 8 weeks later saying, We found the person who sold this individual the drugs. We're charging them with whatever they charged them with. I need you to testify in court about the cause and manner of death. By definition, if there wasn't an autopsy, I can't really be confident of that person's cause and manner of death. So the death would be regarded as undetermined, or I would at least have to waffle in my testimony. Again, my concern is the expectation that I would know in advance of every case which is going to be a crime.
Thank you. Representative Zerwasser, follow-up? Or?
Yeah, I guess I have one final question that Dr. Strobel, in talking with her over the last few days, had asked me to ask Dr. Baker to talk about a little bit, and that is, in the negotiations, in this process, there's always give and take. Is there anything glaringly missing in the compromise that gives you pause and should give the community of medical examiners in Minnesota pause on whether or not to move forward with this compromise language?
Dr. Baker.
Madam Chair, Representative Zerwas, the word glaringly is a little hyperbolic. I'm not sure I want to endorse that. I don't want to over-dramatize the situation, but it does concern me that you would be knowingly crafting a law that was not congruent with the very national standards that are set by the organization that I belong to that accredits our office. I do believe medical examiners should have the latitude to decide in potential drug cases and motor vehicle crashes, regardless of whether you know that a crime has been committed at that time, to make that decision. Again, I cannot emphasize enough that with basic human decency, there is always a way to make sure the families know their voices were heard, to respect their wishes, and find common ground. The fact that you do not have a room full of families from Hennepin and Dakota and Scott and Ramsey and Anoka counties in here telling you how badly they've been treated by the medical examiners for the last 50 years, I think is telling. What happened up north was appalling. I'm embarrassed for my profession because it happened. It never should have happened. It just shouldn't.
Madam Chair.
Representative Zerwas.
What's the path forward for this?
This bill is going to public safety and crime prevention.
Okay, and then will it go to HHS, sir?
If they want it, it probably will.
Okay. I would encourage Representative Green and the co-authors on the bill. I feel comfortable moving the bill forward today. However, I think there's a little bit of work to be done around some of the concerns listed. I know the medical examiner from my area still has a little bit of concern around this. I know there's been a tremendous amount of work moving forward, and I would just hope that the authors, as this bill moves forward, take the little remaining concern that's left into consideration and sees if we can address some of those issues as this bill moves forward.
Thank you, Representative Ross. And I did have a conversation with someone from Anoka County this morning, too, and they cited those two same concerns. So I do hope that all the parties will work together to reach resolution on that. Representative Lash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Baker, I'm trying to get a sense of this where it's at. And the sense I have so far is that this all happened relatively quickly. And I'm not sure if because this is built, deadlines or not on Friday, that it's all happening right now. But this strikes me as one of these issues that we would have sort of chewed on for last session, and then we get to a resolution over interim, and then this session we pass it. And yet this is a bill of first impression for me. And then I heard the compelling testimony from the proponents, as you stated, and then I hear the fact that you came to the table and reached a compromise, which is great. That's how we do things around here. But it was just last Friday. How long ago were you approached by proponents of the bill to reach a resolution on this?
Dr. Baker.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh?
Lesh.
I don't have my calendar in front of me. I want to say it was a little over 2 weeks ago when we first sat down with the now proponents of the bill at my office to talk about the way that medical examiners really should handle cases, and we heard in painful detail about the way one medical examiner handled those two cases. So unless my internal calendar is wrong, it's been no more than 2 weeks and a couple of days. My first testimony was in front of a Senate committee. I want to say it was either last Tuesday or last Wednesday, and then we had about 5 hours of negotiation at my office with the bill's proponents to hammer out what you see in front of you. And again, I want to acknowledge how accommodating they were through those negotiations in getting many of our national performance standards into the bill. I'm just a physician, so I don't know if this process is normal operating procedure in this building or not. I gather that it is. Minnesota Statute 390, as it currently exists, was a seven-year work in process crafted by some of the best legal and medical examiner minds in the state. So it just seems really odd to me that we would make a change this dramatic with so little time. But again, that's just me as a non-legislator talking as a physician who feels like this has just been a race to some kind of finish.
Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Otto von Bismarck said men who love the law or sausages should not know how either is made. Yes, it is messy around here sometimes. And coming from the perspective of a scientist or a physician, if I was, I would probably be deeply disturbed upon my exposure to this process as well. So I don't think that's abnormal to feel that way. Although, let me ask you this. You speak of the national standards. How many jurisdictions in the United States share these standards that this bill contains?
Dr. Baker.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesch. Are you asking me about standards or our statute?
Representative Lesch.
Take your pick. What I'm trying to, Madam Chair and Dr. Baker, I'm trying to get a sense of, a lot of times around here there'll be, Wisconsin does this, Iowa does this, New Jersey does this. There's a certain number of states that contain those standards, and whether it's the standard or the statute, I'm trying to figure out if the proposed changes put us in line, lining up with what those other jurisdictions embrace, or whether we would be an outlier if we were to pass this.
Dr. Baker.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesch, if I could, I'm going to break my answer into two parts. The easy part is the standards that I mentioned earlier are the national performance standards of the national organization that I belong to. Not that it should sway you one way or the other, and I'm not testifying in that capacity, but I happen to be the chair of that standards committee for our organization, so I do feel pretty strongly. Our national standards are consensus-based by the hundreds and hundreds of medical examiners that serve all of the United States. Not every jurisdiction can live up to those standards. Usually it's for financial and reasons and lack of manpower. To answer the second part of your question, what is the national landscape in terms of statutes like the one you're considering today? There are four states in America that have a religious objection statute that looks like what you're looking at today. Those would be New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and Idaho. To the best of my ability to read statutes, much of what was in the original draft of this was lifted in kind of a wholesale fashion from those four statutes. California also has a religious exemption statute, although it's worded quite differently because you during life have to execute some kind of certificate or document saying that your religion would prohibit an autopsy if one were ordered by a coroner. And then somebody who loves you or cares about you would have to know you had that certificate and bring that forward, and then the coroner would have to get a court order and stuff. New Mexico also has a unique statute that recognizes federally recognized Indian tribes and pueblos as being, they have a different course when they work with the medical examiner. It doesn't actually use the word religion, but it does separate out Native Americans. Other than those six, all of the other 44 states in the United States, plus the District of Columbia, plus the U.S. military under 10 U.S. Code 1471, does not have religious exemption statutes. Most of the other statutes I've read reflect very closely the current practice in Minnesota, which is recognizing the judgment and latitude of the medical examiner and the coroner through words like in the public interest or advisable or in his or her opinion, presumably giving them the same level of trust that I enjoy, which is you do this for a living, you've got all this training, and we trust you to make that judgment in light of whatever concerns families may bring to you. That's my take on the national landscape. The bottom line would be we would be joining a group of about four states if this were enacted, or perhaps six, depending on how you want to interpret the California and New Mexico laws.
Well, Madam Chair, here's where I find myself in a quandary. Well, let me ask, before I say that, I have another question for you, Dr. Baker. Have you ever been in a position, or would you ever ignore a judge's order telling you to release a body?
Dr. Baker.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I'm sorry I laughed at that question. I don't know a single person who would ignore a judge's order. That under any circumstances, that is the most foreign thing to me imaginable. It would just never happen in any of the offices that I work with, and I've never heard of anyone else doing that before. And I'm completely flummoxed when I hear testimony that says a county attorney and a sheriff were confused as to whether the court order trumped anything. It's my impression that when a judge writes a court order, unless a higher authority in the judicial system says different, you're done.
Well, Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair and Dr. Baker, that's what I thought too, and I'm a lawyer, so you can always learn something new, I guess, but I don't think I'm going to learn anything new from that medical examiner up north. Madam Chair and members, here's my area of concern. I suspect the reason we're here and we want to move this along is because we've got bill deadlines on Friday. And I'm assuming this is already passed in the Senate, which means the pivotal deadline for it not to be dead is this Friday, and we got to get it to public safety, and then who knows if we have to get it to HHS or not. I'm not sure. So I understand that. But normally, if this was not bill deadline week, I would say my prognosis of this bill is there's a lot more work to do. We're going to get it through this year, but we've got a bunch of more stops to hit before we make sure we get a satisfactory product, and then we'll pass it. But we can't do that apparently now because suddenly we're here on bill deadlines, and we got to do it now. So I'm kind of uncomfortable with moving this through. I don't have the same level of comfort as Representative Zerwas, although I do have confidence that we will get something like this through this session, but I just certainly wish we weren't in the position to have to make a call on this right now because I feel like I need to digest this a little bit more. I know that I, Madam Chair, would be happy with holding off on this and then finding a way to talk about it more and then get it through rules after deadlines. And I would be committed to do that because I know the proponents have operated in good faith and are trying to reach a resolution here. But it is a situation where we're trying to address a colossal screw-up by one individual, and then we're crafting a broad bill to deal with this one guy in this one situation. And that usually requires a little bit more thought and effort. So that would be my preference, Madam Chair. And, you know, of course, it's the will of the committee as to whether or not we're going to move this around, which we may. But I would say that despite that, I'm still committed to seeing movement on this year.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. Representative.
Madam Chair, thank you. I want to say that there is an urgency. I mean, we're talking about religious freedom here, and we're talking about, and the urgency is that the compelling state interest is too low. So we have Minnesota has a constitution that in the Herberger case that is stronger than the U.S. Constitution is with respect protecting religious freedom. And so the compelling state interest in Herberger states that once a claimant has demonstrated a sincere religious belief intended to be protected by the Constitution, the state should be required to demonstrate that public safety cannot be achieved by proposed alternative means. And so that our Constitution requires that we balance competing interests, competing values, and that we may impose additional obligations. And that, to me, is what this proposed bill does, is imposes additional obligations to show a compelling state interest, and it does not change the protocols that the testifier was talking about. It shifts the burden, it requires notice, it provides stronger protections for religious freedom, and that is the urgency.
Right. Representative Lesh.
Chair Representative Allen, I think you're correct. I agree with you. I believe that that is existing law, and I think the judge who issued the order to that rogue medical examiner understood that that is existing law under the Constitution, but this guy ignored it. And so we're trying to strengthen the law to prove to an idiot that the law is the law. Now, that may in fact be necessary. I don't know, but I don't see how that suggests that there's an urgency that we have to get it through here today, because I do have some concerns based upon what Dr. Baker said. At the same time, I think we're going to get something through that yourself and Representative Green want, because you know, it demonstrates a need. I'm not sure it's an urgent need in light of what's been stated, and I think we're entitled to a little bit of time to digest it.
Thank you, Representative Lish.
Madam Chair.
Representative Zerwa.
Madam Chair, members, I think if you look at 3.23, the autopsy is essential to investigation of a suspected crime. And then 3.29, the autopsy is necessary to obtain proper toxicological or other specimens that may represent evidence of a crime. So I think, if anything, between those two lines, with an amendment that we could craft between now and public safety, I think we can get to a spot where Dr. Baker feels comfortable. I think the advocates and proponents feel comfortable. I think those are narrow enough in scope to stop what happened up north, but broad enough that in a good faith effort, a medical examiner going forward with his or her work can do that. Because remember, the compelling state interest would only, that threshold would only be triggered if and when the family would object to the autopsy. And in that case, if the coroner or medical examiner couldn't articulate one of these compelling state interests, then the burden would shift to the medical examiner to get the court order. Whereas now the burden is on the family to say, no, stop. So I think we have a pretty broad set of circumstances in which the county medical examiner or the coroner could say, I think this is a compelling state interest if the family objects. And then if he's unable to articulate one of these compelling state interests, then he has the further relief of getting the court order. So I think if we look between now and public safety, if there's a way for an amendment, and I think probably under, I think 3.23 is pretty self-explanatory, but I think if there's something that we need to work on in 3.29 between now and public safety, I think that could alleviate a lot of the members' concerns, and it's something that I would be interested in working on with Dr. Baker and with the co-authors and some of the other interested parties. But I understand the consternation. I'm not 100% satisfied with this language yet either. But I think between now and public safety, we can hammer something out.
Thank you, Representative West. Representative Johnson, I believe you had a question.
Madam Chair, Dr. Baker, one thing I'm wondering, if you representing the medical examiners across the state or just your office?
Dr. Baker.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I am here as the spokesperson for medical examiners across the state. I'm not representing Hennepin County.
Representative Johnson.
Well, Madam Chair, Secretary, thank you for that. I too, as Representative Lesh, have a little indigestion with this bill. I've talked to Representative Green about some of the issues I've had and passed some information on to them, and a lot of the concerns that the county attorneys have had with this bill. In the negotiation, has the County Attorneys Association been involved in this and dealing with the issues that they had, or have they not been involved in this negotiation to get to this delete all amendment?
Dr. Baker.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, the only negotiations that I've personally been involved with were the bill's supporters and the medical examiner, a handful of medical examiners, and an investigator from my office. We did have an attorney with us representing the medical examiners kind of for part of those negotiations, but in the broader context of your question, I don't know if what the County Attorneys Association has done. I mean, I wasn't part of any of their negotiations or deliberations, and they were not part of anything that I was negotiating with the bill's supporters.
Representative Green, do you know if the county attorney's been a part of this in any way from your angle?
Madam Chair, excuse me. To the best of my knowledge, I do not think so. None have contacted me personally on the bill, although they do, you know, they're aware of it.
All right. So. Thank you. Representative Johnson?
Madam Chair, just a little bit of concern I have because these autopsies that are done, there's a lot of situations, there's a lot of evidence that's gathered that could be vital to whether the charges are filed or not in a what could be actually criminal incidents involving the death.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. I think what we're going to do, since we're on the subject of county attorneys, on the testifiers list, our last testifier on the list is Phil Prokopowitz, Assistant County Attorney from Dakota County. So let's get a legal perspective, then we'll hear from the other folks that were here to testify as well. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name. My apologies for probably botching your name severely, and go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair, my name is Phil Prokopowitz. I'm the Chief Deputy Dakota County Attorney, representing the Dakota County Attorney's Office as well as the Minnesota County Attorneys Association regarding this particular bill. As the previous testimonies indicated, on this bill, the county attorneys across the state are extremely sensitive to the situations that brought this bill forward, as testified by Ms. St. George, and I think the actions of the county attorneys in that particular case should be commended. We also would echo and support the comments of Dr. Baker, in addition to his support of the bill, as well as his concerns regarding the lack of some of the other compelling interests, such as drug overdose cases, motor vehicle accidents, and the like. Another aspect of this particular bill, though, that concerns the County Attorneys Association is this bill now puts in another potential administrative and court proceedings into these particular processes. As indicated by Representative Johnson, these autopsies are critical to the investigation and prosecution of criminal activity. They usually occur very quickly, within a matter of hours or a day or two of the particular incident. Valuable evidence is gained as a result of these autopsies, DNA evidence, the bullet, all sorts of x-rays, broken bones, and those types of things. Oftentimes, we do not know whether or not criminal activity is particularly involved. I'm currently working on a case where we didn't find out until 3 years after the incident, based on some documentation that there was criminal activity involved. One of the concerns that we primarily have, though, is, again, has to do with the speed of the bill, as Representative Lesch has pointed out in this particular case, and a need for necessary safeguards, because once you all of a sudden interject a court proceeding into this particular case, it may require, and we don't know if it's going to require us to move forward and reveal information to support a compelling state interest or public interest that may jeopardize the integrity of an ongoing investigation. A family member who may be objecting based on religious ground may be a potential suspect in the case, and we may have information of that. Then how do we move forward and try to identify a compelling state interest, or the medical examiner would have to do that? What is the protection on that particular information from being displayed in a court proceeding? We're also concerned about, once you do interject a court proceeding, additional delays. Is it an appealable order? Will go through the appellate court system, which could cause additional delays of weeks, of months, and those types of things. That being said, we are willing to sit down in response to Officer Johnson. To my knowledge, we have not been in contact or discussions with the sponsors and the authors of the bill. We are willing to do that. We are willing to sit down with them and talk with them regarding some of these procedural concerns that we have and the need to protect the integrity of some of this information and the process itself. And with that, I will stand for any questions.
Thank you, sir. I would encourage the proponents then to reach out to the county attorney's office and continue asking other professionals going forward what language needs to be changed. And so thank you for being here and for volunteering to be part of the process. We greatly appreciate that. Any questions for this testifier? Thank you, sir. Seeing none, we will move on to our next testifier on the list, Jason Adkins. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jason Adkins. I'm the Executive Director and General Counsel of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, which is the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota. I'm also here today in my capacity as a board member of the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, which is an interfaith justice advocacy organization composed of the Jewish Community Relations Council of Minnesota and the Dakotas, the Minnesota Council of Churches, the Islamic Center of Minnesota, and other faith communities. We're here today not because our member communities in most cases object to autopsies. We don't. There are certainly Jewish communities, some Christian communities, and Muslim communities that do have objections to autopsies. But why we're really here today is to stand for the principle that the Catholic Church and other faith communities support, which is that religious liberty is an essential human right, an important component of ensuring human dignity of each person to respond to the call of the Creator consistent with their conscience. We know that throughout American history, religious liberty has been an important value, really our first freedom, and affirmed in culture and law. It's not a Christian value, it's an American value. Now, when the United States Supreme Court abandoned the compelling interest test for burdening religious exercise under the First Amendment, Minnesota was the first state to reject that principle and impose, in the Hershberger case, as Representative Allen mentioned, a compelling interest standard because of the premium it put on protecting religious communities, particularly religious minorities, and in that case, it was the Amish. One might ask then, given that the compelling interest test is the constitutional standard in Minnesota, so this is already the law that applies to medical examiners and other government officials, they can't burden religious exercise without a compelling interest, one might ask then why we need a statutory framework to address this problem. What statutory religious accommodations do is to make clear to government officials that they may not burden religious liberty in a particular context, such as in the performing autopsies, absent a compelling interest. Again, the burden shouldn't be on the families or individuals, particularly at times like the death of a loved one, to assert their constitutional rights. Most importantly, statutory religious liberty accommodations allow the legislative process to diffuse such potential conflicts and conserve judicial resources by drawing reasonable lines of accommodation between the sometimes competing interests of the broader public and religious believers. Religious liberty is certainly not a license to do whatever you want. It is subject to the common good. Now, the legislation proposed today embodies the possibilities for drawing reasonable lines of accommodation between the important public interests of both protecting religious liberty and ensuring that the information gathering process of an autopsy can be a service to the important governmental interest in solving crimes. And indeed, the proposed legislation and its compelling interest is defined broadly to ensure that medical examiners have the ability to perform autopsies when the public necessity requires it. Now, we recognize that protecting civil rights can place limitations on government actors. That is the whole point of a Bill of Rights. But we are here today because religious liberty is an important value worth protecting, even when it can be an inconvenience to government officials. Now, if you've heard from the county attorney, they have a duty to advocate broadly for the exercise of their powers, but they also have a duty to obey and act consistently with the Constitution. Creating a statutory framework to address these issues is a reasonable way of accommodating the public's interest in both protecting the free exercise of religion and its interest in ensuring that autopsies continue to be a tool of the investigation in the criminal context. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Adkins. Any questions for this testifier? Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Kulik. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and any associations that you have.
Thank you. My name is Gail Kulik, and I work for Kulik Consulting, and I'm on contract doing government relations with the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians. I first became aware of the situation with Mushkub Albid, the elderly spiritual leader that you heard about who was killed in the one car accident, within a day of his passing. I began doing research on autopsy laws within days. I reached out to the medical examiners in late February, and we set a meeting for 3 weeks ago yesterday. So there are a few things that perhaps not everyone is aware of that have been happening as quickly as we can. Around the same time, late February, I reached out to the person doing government relations for the County Attorneys Association, even before there was a bill drafted, to give them a heads up. I did the same with the sheriffs and the Department of Health. We've been very proactive. Our negotiations have involved Mr. Ben Schwiegert from the Hennepin County Attorney's Office. He has been incredibly active. And so it would be misleading to think that there has been no contact with the County Attorney's Office. There's been active sharing of information and even active negotiations. There was also a sit-down meeting with the Ramsey County attorney a couple of weeks ago. So one of the problems has been that the County Attorneys Association didn't meet until last Friday, and so they, as an organization, they were not able to meet and discuss. So individually, we've been doing everything that we can and certainly open to their input. I credit Ben Schwiegert from the Hennepin County Attorney's Office with some very tough negotiation and tough compromise on this. I also want to correct a little bit of misinformation about what other states are doing. A majority of Americans live in a state where there are some limitations put on medical examiners. You've already heard testimony that we've got a state constitution, which in fact, when it comes to religious freedom, has stronger language than the federal. In our federal constitution, United States Constitution, you can't prohibit the exercise of religion. But in our state constitution, you can't even infringe on it. That's some pretty strong protection. What this bill is trying to do, of course, is strike that balance, because everybody agrees that there are crimes to be solved and public health to be protected. But our constitution and the state Supreme Court law that is the controlling case said we've got to balance those two things. When an autopsy is done, as in the case of Mushkub Albid, where law enforcement says we don't need one, there's no sign of foul play. The hospital where he passed away said we don't need an autopsy because there's no sign of any threat to the health, contagious disease, infection. Then it becomes a matter of gathering data and information, because you're not protecting the health and you're not protecting the safety of the public anymore. And while that data is very valuable, it does not trump people's constitutional rights, including their right of religious expression. Of the 50 states in the U.S., as I said, there are 56% of Americans live in a state where there is some limitation put on, and they run the gamut from the 8 states where there are allowances made for religious objections to autopsies, to Utah, where the medical examiner has no jurisdiction over car accidents, to other states like Florida and Texas, where these, what I call discretionary autopsies, because they are the ones that are not for public health and safety, the family has to consent, and without a family's consent, you don't do an autopsy. So this is certainly recognized that we need to create this balance, and I believe that we have a good bill. The proponents of the bill feel that they have done a great deal of work to acknowledge those national standards that Dr. Baker talked about, but we've got to remind ourselves those national standards have never been filtered through our constitutional rights, ever. And while I'm sure it's frustrating from a medical science point of view to have to compromise, your job here is to do that filtering, is to apply our constitutional rights to governmental interests to strike that correct balance.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson, or Ms. Kulik. Any questions for this testifier? Representative Lash.
Madam Chair, thank you. Ms. Kulik, first of all, thank you for doing what you did to reach out to the County Attorney's Association and the medical examiners about this. And I think you're right. It's our job to balance those interests, as you stated. Normally, though, this is a deliberative body, or at least it's supposed to be. And so we take a little time to digest those. And I'm trying to figure out, you stated you approached the County Attorney's Association a few weeks ago, and I couldn't understand why it was only a few weeks ago until I just looked up in the news, and the gentleman died on the 7th of February?
Correct.
So that's what's, I guess, driving the speed of this, not necessarily the fact that something happened last summer and you just got around to it in February. It's this, just that his the tragedy occurred on February 7th. But I'm more concerned about the perceived urgency and when this is something that we need to discuss more thoroughly. I think this committee is one of the committees that is entitled to have a conversation, a robust conversation, and in light of the reservations expressed here today, I'd like just a little bit more time to figure that out. In light of the fact that the deceased has been returned to his family, what would you say makes this extremely urgent to get this through today?
Ms. Kulik.
Madam Chair and Representative Lesh, you pointed out the reality of deadlines. I think what makes this urgent is that we have this stunning gap in our statutes. Our statutes don't reflect our state constitution, our United States Constitution, and they don't even reflect our case law. And because I really believe that this is doable. Those states that have already adopted state statutes that are very close to what we're proposing here, where there is a specific religious objection, they have invented the wheel. We're not inventing this in a vacuum. We're not creating concepts that are brand new and foreign. We've got a beautiful pathway already set, and part of that is that Hershberger decision. It set the standard. It helped us to understand that the tests are, is there a compelling government interest? And where there is a compelling government interest, the government is allowed to override some constitutional interests and even religious authority. However, when there is a sincerely held religious belief, that governmental interest must be furthered with the least restrictive and least intrusive manner. So because we already had a pathway, I believe we're ready. We're ready for this.
Ms. Kulik, thank you. I have to go present a bill to another committee. If Ms. St. George has anything new other than what Ms. Kulik just articulated, go ahead. And then I see Dr. Baker would like to respond as well. So my vice chair will take care of that. Thank you so much. And because I probably won't be here when the vote is taken, I do encourage all parties to continue working on this. I don't think we're there yet. And so I appreciate the good questioning and stuff that's gone on in this committee. And I think, like I said, there's more work to do on this. And I know some of you are on the Public Safety Committee, and we'll make sure that gets done. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, thank you for that. This is a style thing, but you know, when I was chairing this committee, there's no way that I would let this bill through at this point, not because I don't agree with what the proponent's trying to do. I probably do, but I feel like it's been one too many times in the history of my tenure in this legislature. I've been sitting on a committee and had someone come up to me from the last committee it was on and said, God, I hope you fix this because we just sent you a big old burger you got to take a bite of. And I'm like,
why weren't you doing your job in the last committee? So which isn't to say that's what your bill is. You got a lot of the stuff knocked out, but there are a few concerns that I have. So just as a matter of principle, there are some people around here that are confident of your ability to work it out with the medical examiners and the county attorneys, and so they're going to vote yes on it. That's not me. I don't do that. I feel like I have a responsibility to not send something out of this committee that the committee is satisfied with. So,
Representative Lesh, with all due respect, Representative Zerwas has already said he's going to be working with these folks, and he's on public safety as well. I don't think he's going to let this, and Representative Johnson is the same, and Representative Hillstrom, I don't think they're going to let it out of that committee unless there's a total consensus has been reached. Otherwise, it'll just go there and pass away.
Yeah, and Matt, sure, I trust them. I believe they'll do a good job, but the people in my district didn't vote for them. They voted for me. So this is my responsibility to make sure I get it right. I'm sure it's going to pass out of here, but I would hope, Madam Chair, that if changes are made in public safety or in some other area, that it gets pulled back to this committee so we get to consider whether the civil law components of this bill, this committee feels appropriate, not another committee.
So noted. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there any other testimony?
Yes.
Please state your name for the record, please.
Rebecca St. George. I would like to point, well, I have 2 points. One is that, you know, you're talking about this being so sudden and so rushed, and I guess in a way procedurally it is. But a quarter of a century ago, the same thing happened to Mashkoub Abed's father. He died in a very similar manner. He was brought to, at the time, the coroner, and they were going to perform an autopsy, and his family was mortified, his family, including Mashkoub Abed, the man who recently died. They actually went ahead and stole his body and made off with it, and nothing happened. But I just want to point out, this isn't a new issue in Indian country. And to the second point of that, I'm getting calls and people dropping by weekly in my little office out on the reservation with elders who are terrified that someone's going to cut into them when they die now because they saw that this happened. And they know that this guy is still the medical examiner in Carlton County, and they know that unless somebody who has a voice, who knows somebody who can call somebody, he has free rein under the law, in his mind, to do that. We've got all these little old men and little old ladies up on the reservation who are terrified that this is going to happen to them. And so I think that does lend to the urgency of doing something right now to give them some comfort, to give them some idea of how things can look later on.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, just a little bit concern I have with what Ms. Kulik had stated. In Minnesota, a couple years ago, we had problems with our criminal labs. And we had to make some changes to make them stronger and make them more responsible for the work they were doing. And we now they have to be accredited. Unfortunately, what I see of this bill, it's losing that a little bit in the medical examiner's duties. Some of the things that concerned me in her statements was concerning because the coroner's office and the autopsies is very critical evidence in a lot of crimes. The majority of medical examiners, I probably the only exception is the one that they're talking about, did not do his due diligence, did not do what was proper, and what the current law states already, and what the courts have ruled already. So I'm concerned rushing this thing through, because I looked it up, last Monday. It was just introduced. It wasn't sent to our committee until last Tuesday, 1 week ago. So I have some concerns on this bill because of the court proceedings that can arise out of criminal cases that involve deaths, and I don't want to make our medical examiners work questionable because of something that we do. So, like I say, I want to be careful and want to make sure we do this right, and we cannot rush this through. I'm going to trust that the Representative Green and Al are going to work with the county attorneys and make sure all the issues are resolved, because there are some issues that we do need to deal with to make sure that we do this right, because this is a medical examiners is very important, not just in the public safety as far as for some issues, but also in the court system, because we want to make sure that they're doing their job properly and that any guilty person especially is involved in taking the life of somebody and causing their death, that they are punished the way they should be.
Thank you. Dr. Baker, did you have a question or a statement or something you'd like to add? Please come forward. Dr. Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to speak again. I'll try to keep this as short as I can. As the only physician in the room testifying, I debated the wisdom of talking about statute after statute after statute in a room full of legislators and attorneys, but I feel obligated to do it. I told you earlier that there are four states in America that have laws that mirror what you were considering today. That is New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and Ohio. I would think I was nervous earlier this morning. I might have blurted out Idaho by mistake, but it's Ohio. More importantly, some of you may have been given information that there actually are large numbers of states out there that have religious exemption laws. I've heard repeated testimony, not just this morning, but in other committee hearings, that 50% or more of Americans live in this situation, or 50% or more of Americans live in that situation. It's important that you understand that the statutes that are being used to bolster that statement have nothing to do with medical examiner and coroner autopsies. Those are just decedents who died in hospitals or academic medical centers where well-meaning physicians would like the family to give permission to do a postmortem examination to advance the science of medicine. Those statutes have nothing to do with medical examiner and coroner work. In most cases, you've been provided the wrong statute and not that state's medical examiner and coroner statute. In the last week, I surveyed my peers across the country, and I got more than 100 responses representing more than 40 states. So I know the medical examiners and how they interpret their statutes. I also read most of those statutes. I personally conferred with the chief medical examiners or large regional medical examiners in multiple states, and I'll specifically mention Texas and Florida, since those were provided to you as examples of states that have religious exemption laws. Those laws do not apply to medical examiner cases. I bring this up because if it matters to you what the national context is, you should have the right data. If you feel you're going to do the right thing, regardless of what that is, and it doesn't matter to you what the national context is, that's fine, and I respect that. But if it does matter to you, you should know that Minnesota is going to join the ranks of something on the order of 4 to 6 states, not 10 or 15 or 19 states, as may have been represented to you. And I just want to make that clear if you're going to look at other state statutes as any kind of guidepost. It is not a legislative oversight that 44 other states in the District of Columbia do not recognize religious objections. They have statutes that are very similar to what Minnesota 390 is right now, which recognizes that there's an extremely high level of training and judgment that goes into being a medical examiner, and they entrust their medical examiners to always balance that against the family's concerns, whatever those concerns might be. We are here today because one person made two really, really bad decisions in the course of only 3 days. That made the national news. I was in Florida when that happened, and I got the headline. If medical examiners across the country were really doing this with impunity, we would be replete with stories like this. But in fact, we're not. It never should have happened. I cannot tell you how awful I feel for those families. And I'm embarrassed that somebody who has the same title as me pulled a stunt like this. But I just want to make sure you understand the national context as appropriately as I can possibly articulate it for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Baker. Any comments in conclusion? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I apologize because I was late, so I didn't hear all the testimony. But I have two questions for you, Doctor. The first question is, we have all sorts of places in Minnesota statutes where we give different procedures for folks who have different religious beliefs, when they want to bury a body, whether or not to embalm, all sorts of places in the statute. Why should this statute be exempt because we have trained professionals? And can those trained professionals be brought up like lawyers can on ethics complaints and lose their license because of, as you said, two pieces of bad behavior, or is it some other standard?
Dr. Baker.
Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, I can't see your...
Representative Hillstrom.
Representative Hillstrom, thank you very much for the question. I can't speak to the legal basis for whether you should change the statute or not. I can only testify to the medical basis. And I don't know what ethical charges could be brought against the individual at play, because I've never seen a medical examiner do this before. I don't know if the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice would feel it had any jurisdiction in this at all. That would be somebody else's question to ask, but I suppose that's one avenue. The gentleman involved did resign his position, so there does seem to have been a swift administrative solution to that individual circumstance. Now, I don't know who is providing medical examiner services at this very moment to that region of the state, but other than that, I don't know how to answer your question. Again, physicians generally do have very high ethical standards, and again, what happened up north has simply never happened in any of the other offices that I've ever worked in or been affiliated with in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many other entities do you know get paid by the body for autopsies?
Dr. Baker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I do not know what the arrangement for other offices is. I can speak for my three-county office. I get the same budget every year, regardless of how many autopsies I do, and I don't get paid by the autopsy. There's absolutely no financial incentive to do autopsies that I don't believe are advisable and in the public interest. There is no financial incentive to do them. In fact, there's a strong disincentive in a system like that to do unnecessary autopsies, because they take a lot of time, and they cost a lot of money. And that's something that we always think about in context of, is this autopsy necessary, and how does the family feel about it? We're also stewards of precious taxpayer dollars, and I'm certainly not going to use those to do an autopsy that I don't think is advisable and in the public interest.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In this case, I believe that there was a court order ordering the surrendering of the body to the family that was ignored. Is there something in the statute that allows for penalties or the loss of license for folks who blatantly disobey a court order?
Dr. Baker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, it would never have occurred to me that one would require a statute to tell you that you cannot legally ignore a court order. I thought that was Citizenship 101. I just always assumed that you cannot legally ignore a court order. Whether a licensing medical body would look at that, the fact that someone did that, I have no idea. But I don't live in a world where I would ever ignore a court order, so I don't know how to answer that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Church. I'm just going to make a final comment. I think it's important that folks continue to. I think that what happened was so outrageous that it rose to the level of legislative interference. And so I believe between now and the end of the legislative session, we're going to have some legislation. And the question is exactly what those words say and what they mean. So I'm going to be supporting the proposal to move forward. I hope folks continue to discuss the issue and try to work out whatever that language needs to be to make sure we have it right. And whether that is having an ethics board have the ability to take the license for this kind of behavior or whatever. Additionally, you know, I'm not sure, but I am very, very troubled by what happened here, and I believe that it is appropriate for the legislature to intervene in these kinds of cases.
Thank you, Representative. And with that, I will renew the interest of all of this entire committee, as well as the members on the committee that this is going to. And with that, Representative Green re-renews his motion. Oh, My apologies. With that, I renew my motion to have House File 1935, as amended, be sent to the Public Safety and Crime Prevention Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Motion carries. On to House File 1793, Representative Lunan. Representative, I understand your bill is of non-controversy. In the interest of time, we ask that that you be as brief as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do I have a motion for House File 1973? Yes, Representative Hoppe moves that motion. Thank you. Representative Lunan, your brief summary, please.
Mr. Chairman and committee, this bill deals, I've got Commissioner DePasquale here from the Racing Commission, and this bill is designed to clean up some statutory languages from a definition standpoint. Some of the items on the list here you have of research points that I think are pertinent are item number 10, which is license insurance renewals that will allow for multi-year licenses instead of the annual licenses, which will reduce some administrative costs. I think another important item on here is item number 12, which has to do with fees with people that work at a racetrack. Currently, there's a cap of $100. Most of the fees fall below that. If you're a farrier who are just going out and trimming hooves of horses, things like that. But we've also got some big out-of-state vendors here that, for the sake of cash flowing this commission.
Excuse me, Representative, excuse me for a moment. Could everyone please take their conversations outside so we could conduct the next bill hearing? Thank you very much. Representative Lunan.
I invite them to stick around. This is fascinating stuff. This is down. A lot of this is down in Shakopee, the land of fun. And we invite all of you to come down at some point to visit all of our amenities down there. The item 12, we want to lift the cap so some of the bigger vendors like a Bally, things like that, the fees that we're charging them for the resource they're taking advantage of is more equitable. On item number 13, which has to do with the disbursement of purses, it simplifies and clarifies the language so that people can understand more, basically, the money that they're racing for. On item number 15, what happens is the legislature in the past has approved for a card club at the horse tracks, and what that card club was designed to do is to create revenue that can be used to supplement the purse. And what the commissioner has done here is tightened up the language, very appropriately so, to make sure that the right amount of money, the right percentages of money, I'm sorry, is appropriated towards that. And then item number 22, you can cross out. That has been removed. The commissioner has worked very, very hard for peace in the valley on this, and that was one of the sticking points was removing a betting cap in the card club, and so that has been pulled off of the table. It was a pretty straightforward bill. I'll turn the mic over to my testifier, Mr. DePasquale.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representatives Tom DePasquale, Executive Director of the Minnesota Racing Commission. Let me just highlight a couple of provisions that might be of interest to the committee, and I'm happy to speak to any of the other sections that might be of interest or concern. First one is Section 8, which expressly grants, amongst the Commission's powers and duties, subpoena authority. One of the curiosities of the current legislation is that the stewards and judges who govern racing during the race meet have subpoena authority in the statute, but there's no express grant of subpoena authority to the Commission itself, in spite of the fact that the statute authorizes us to conduct necessary investigations, to ask for submission of information, documents, records, and any information we deem necessary to an investigation. In researching Minnesota law, I found 145 other grants of subpoena authority, including the Gambling Control Board and Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division, but oddly enough, the Commission itself had no such authority. So I think this is a clarification. I think it's going back to the days when racing took place for 90 days, and that was all that took place at the track, so the grant of subpoena was given to the stewards, but now the operations are year-round, and so it's only appropriate the Commission have year-round authority. Another provision that may be of interest to the committee is Section 18. This is an expansion of the authority of stewards and judges to impose fines not exceeding $5,000 rather than $2,000. The reason for that change is that anything less than that triggers a contested case. So the problem is we would be spending a lot of money to recover $2,000. The framework of the statute right now gives the commission authority to set a scale for fines, setting a minimum and a maximum. The commission, by rule, has a maximum fine on licensees of only $5,000. But again, oddly enough, the stewards and judges' authority does not even rise to the level of what are appropriate fines. So by raising that level of $5,000, the penalty authority of the stewards is more in line with existing rule. And finally, with respect to Section 19 on fines, the provision is that a fine in excess of $5,000 is the new threshold or trigger for a contested case. The existing one in statute is $2,000, which, again, we consider far too low. I want to clarify Section B, which is new, and that raised some confusion in the Senate Judiciary Committee, so I want to make sure our intent is clear. The new provision reads that the prevailing party in a contested case, if the commission is a prevailing party in a contested case, the commission may recover from amounts to be forwarded to the Minnesota Management and Budget Office for a deposit in the General Revenue Fund, reasonable attorney's fees and costs associated with the contested case. The reason for this provision, first of all, this is no increased penalty on the licensee. The licensee only pays the fine that is imposed for violation of the rule. But from the amount of the fine, the amount that is recouped by the commission is that to compensate us for the Attorney General costs of bringing the contested case. The question that was asked in the Senate Judiciary Committee is, why isn't that provision reciprocal? And in doing research over the weekend, I learned that Minnesota has an Equal Access to Justice Act that was passed in 1986 and provides for attorney's fees when people are the victims of agency action that has no substantial basis. So this is already in law. It protects the interest of the regulated entities against frivolous actions brought by agencies. It's been used by many people who have been aggrieved parties in contested cases to recover against Minnesota agencies, including against the Racing Commission. So I think the rights of the licensees are already protected by Minnesota law. So with that, I'll stand to answer any questions. I will just add that this has been supported on a bipartisan basis in both chambers. It's supported by the industry, and I'm happy to have your support if that's what you decide. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify in support or opposition of this bill?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
One thing I omitted, I apologize. There is a provision that reconciles an inconsistency between Minnesota Chapter 364, which protects the rights of, is a criminal offender rehabilitation statute, and the information that the commission is entitled to on background checks. And I'm sorry, I omitted this in my original remarks. We learned just recently that the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension is interpreting Chapter 364 to exclude from the information it provides to the commission on background checks certain information relating to charges that have not been finally adjudicated. Chapter 240 requires applicants to file an affidavit with the commission disclosing all charges that have been brought against them. So historically, we've gotten a complete criminal background check. We now believe we're getting less than a full criminal background check required by Chapter 240. So we have drafted an exclusion for the Racing Commission in Chapter 364 that would allow us once again to get full background checks. So that's another change that might be of interest to the committee.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, I move that House File 1793 be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. House File 1972, Representative Schumacher. Do I have a motion for House File 1972? Representative Hoppe moves 1972 before the committee. Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House Bill 1972 is the revisor's bill. It just has some technical changes, some cross-reference fixes, and some grammatical fixes as well. And with that, I have Jeff Case from the revisor's office with us to answer any of your questions.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Jeff Case, revisor of statutes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is our annual revisor's bill. Corrects errors in Minnesota statutes and Minnesota rules, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Great, thank you. There also is an amendment, Representative Schumacher.
Yes, I believe it's the A15 amendment, and that is a fix to get it in line with what the Senate language is, and also something that a fix that the counties brought forward to the revisors.
Representative Johnson moves said author's amendment. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The amendment carries. All right. Any other discussion or comments about this bill? Anyone from the audience wish to testify in support or opposition? Seeing none and seeing no questions or comments from the committee, I move that House File 1972 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The motion carries. You're off to Committee on Taxes, Representative Schumacher. Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, we are adjourned.